Bring it in. Read Option Podcast back. We have a solo pod today. The boys are a little busy. I know last week I had promised you guys that we would have a follow-up podcast to recap more of the Super Bowl. Ended up having a busy week. Your boy got sick a little bit, and Vito had a crazy week recovering post-Super Bowl. And I'm also getting ready to move. So anyone who's moved recently, you know exactly how stressful and busy that time is. But I did promise you guys that we would have a podcast here. And as we are a little past a week removed from the Eagles Super Bowl victory, I wanted to do just a little Eagles fan kind of unplanned, not unplanned. I thought a good amount about what I want to say, but just kind of a recap of what this means. You know, I'd be lying if I said we didn't have a few sarsaparillas during the podcast last week in the reaction pod. Vito might have still been drunk from Bourbon Street. Honestly, it was that kind of a day. And you know, when your team wins the Super Bowl, it's kind of like that week between Christmas and New Year's where nothing's really real and work's not real. And the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, kind of like the few weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas where you don't really feel like you're doing the most productive job at work. You kind of do what you need to do, and you're just looking forward to that day. And that's kind of what the last 3 weeks have felt like. It's all kind of been a blur. And so I want to get into kind of my overall thoughts about, you know, the Super Bowl. And obviously we had the parade last week, which was awesome. But I also want to make sure we do a little state of the NFL, you know, before we hit the combine, before we hit free agency, before we hit the draft. For all of that stuff kind of comes into play, I want to take a moment to just kind of reflect on this season and kind of give us a little state as to where we're at. So I'll do that at the back end of the pod. So if you're tired of the Eagles Super Bowl talk, and if you're an Eagles fan listening to this, I can't imagine you are, because I'm not. I'm not ready to be done with this team. Then you can go ahead and skip to the end of the pod and get kind of the state of the NFL here. You know, as I've sat here a week removed, you know, over a week removed from the Super Bowl, it still doesn't feel real to me. And I've talked about it with everybody, everywhere I've gone for the last week. I've worn my Kelly Green Eagles jacket just kind of to hope that somebody, you know, at the bar, somebody at work, somebody whose house you're going to, just somebody says that, congrats, your boys did it. And especially down here, I've gotten a lot of nasty looks all in the same, but you know, those people can't say shit, right? I mean, yeah, maybe get a couple of nasty looks. I was walking through Home Depot yesterday, a lot of nasty looks, didn't get a single Go Birds. It happens. Obviously in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia area, it's perceived a little bit differently. I think everyone's still riding the high. But, you know, again, as I'm sitting here, none of this feels real, you know, like, and as I've reflected on this and in talking with people about why, you know, and how great that game was and how fun it was and the fact that it was just a flat out ass kicking, you know, sports are, I always had this idea of doing a documentary one day. It's called It's Just Sports. Because so many people in your life, particularly people who aren't sports fans, will be like, what's the big deal? It's just sports. But at the same time, when you think about the things that we all collectively watch at the same time, you know, that's not like an election that comes every 4 years, or, you know, the Olympics or the World Cup that come every 4 years. When you think about the things that truly unite an area in a a specific part of our country, at least, that in this unifying way, this almost religious way, where we're all kind of celebrating something bigger than ourselves, something that represents an entire area of our country and around the world too. I mean, this goes for soccer and cricket and all these massive sports and that are all around the world. Sports is it's just sports. Sports is legitimately one of the few things that can do that. Music, movies, yeah, no question. You go to see a band live in an arena and it's you and 30,000 people enjoying your favorite band. Like, that's an amazing experience. There's no question. But we're talking about millions of people who are out at the Eagles Super Bowl parade on Friday. And that's not even including people like myself who weren't able to go. Sports is this amazing unifier. And as much as people might want to downplay the idea of sports being as significant as it is, it really is a special thing, especially when your team's able to hit those heights. And as I'm reflecting on my hometown, where I'm from, my favorite team, the number one team in all of Philadelphia. Like, I love the Sixers, I love the Flyers, I love the Phillies. Nothing touches the Eagles. And in addition to that, throughout the history of the city of Philadelphia, we don't blow teams out, right? I mean, you can look through the history of Philadelphia championships, and they're all teams that overachieved, or it wasn't supposed to be them, but they did. And so as I looked across the faces of millions of people at the parade and the countless videos and the joy and my timeline still just being flooded with people who've kept receipts, the Jalen Hurts haters out there, and just how happy it has made so many people listening to the Philly Special podcast on from The Ringer. And they were reading emails that got sent in about, I used to watch the Eagles every Sunday with my dad, and we had our rituals and our routines. And, on Sunday, I'm going to be thinking about him because he's not here anymore. Right. Like, yeah, it's just sports, but it means so much more to massive communities of people. I was pretty drunk Super Bowl night, and my first thought was like, I have to FaceTime my mom. The person who gave me this insatiable passion for sports. And she doesn't, she loves the Eagles and she's was beyond happy and follows it all. And I, even with all of that, I'm still not sure. And she'd probably be the first one to say she doesn't have my borderline psychotic behavior. Maybe not even borderline. But I remember my mom screaming at Flyers games and being like, that's what Philly sports is. And so every city who gets one of these, and it happens, in the major four times a year, you get these moments so infrequently, and they stick with you forever. And I can remember the 2008 Phillies, and the 2017 in Philly, that we really thought that was going to be the year, but nope, they came up short. And 2008 was a year where we're like, yeah, I don't really know if we're gonna see this again. I can't get my hopes up. And Brad Lidge is the perfect season. You think about the guys, the unlikely pitchers. I mean, Cole Hamels was a young stud, but then it's Brett Myers and Joe Blanton, Jamie Moyer at 40 years old throwing, 83 mile an hour fastballs and starting game three of the World Series. That's what Philly Super Bowl or Philly championships have always been. 2017, and obviously the psychotic nature of Nick Foles beat Tom Brady. That doesn't happen, right? And as I see this sea of happy people and millions of people across the city of Philadelphia just elated with so much joy, the past Super Bowl and past championships, they didn't feel real, but it sunk in after a week. We were Super Bowl champs, but it was immediately replaced with, what the fuck are we gonna do? Everyone in Philadelphia, whether you were on Team Wentz or Foles, you had an opinion. There was a problem that was going to have to be addressed the start of the next season. The Phillies were a little different because, we had that nucleus and we thought, man, we're going to be back here. But baseball's so fickle. And yeah, they were back in the World Series, but they couldn't get it done, even with Cliff Lee, who was unbelievable during that run. And so with this unbelievable stretch of joy, unbridled joy and happiness across the city of Philadelphia, I find myself so curious as to why this hasn't sunk in. And I think when you look across the history of Philadelphia, this stuff isn't supposed to happen to us. This is supposed to be, we caught lightning in a bottle. I think the letdown of the 4 or 5 years after the 2008 World Series is kind of what set the tone for me of like, yeah, this is one and done. You're not getting back there. So appreciate it while you can. And 8 years ago, we watched the Eagles win a Super Bowl. We watched Nick Foles do the unthinkable as a backup quarterback, missing your starting left tackle, missing Darren Sproles, missing the laundry list of injuries that we had on that team, the defense that was good during the regular season, but gave up 500 passing yards to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Like, I wonder if other people in the Philadelphia area feel what I'm feeling, because none of this feels real. And the joy is real. The happiness is real. I'm still kind of waiting for myself to wake up and be like, actually, it's the night before the Super Bowl, and this has all just been a crazy dream. And all that happiness and joy spread across a Philly that a city that I love so dearly, and a community that I care about so much, that's just going to go away in the snap of a finger. And I wonder if it's because we've never had a team that's won that you look, not only was it so dominant, but then you go, why can't they do it next year? Like, it's crazy because throughout the history of Philadelphia, 1980, the Phillies are the worst organization in baseball up until that point. The losingest organization in baseball history is the Philadelphia Phillies. 1980, Tug McGraw, that team, how unexpected it was. I mean, really, throughout the course of history, the only championship that Philly won in a dominant fashion was the 1983 Sixers, the fo-fo-fo, Moses Malone, Dr. J. Like, that was kind of the only time that we're like, man, we're dominant. But you looked across and you said, yeah, but Larry Bird's over there, and yeah, the Atlanta Hawks are getting better. The Detroit Pistons are in the East. And by the way, if you get there, then you get Magic Johnson. And that team never ended up being what it could have been. And maybe that is what ends up happening with this Eagles team. You never know. But 8 years ago, we celebrated a championship down Broad Street, down the Ben Franklin Parkway, hoisting the Lombardi Trophy from the most improbable championship, arguably in NFL history. And now, 8 years later, we're back with a different team entirely. That 2017 team was full of guys. I mean, we knew BG, we knew Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson, we knew all those guys. The core of that team, I dated back to the Andy Reid and through Chip Kelly. And now you look around, it's like you got two of them. And Lane's coming back. We know Lane's coming back. BG, some of the stuff he said, the Super Bowl, makes me think he's going to come back next year. I don't know how he'll feel in a couple of weeks when he has to start gearing up to play another season. But I just keep thinking to myself, man, like, this was real. They beat Patrick Mahomes. They beat the best quarterback. They beat the best head coach. They beat arguably the best tight end of all time. They beat one of the best, if not the best, defensive coordinators in NFL history. They beat an all-time Hall of Fame defensive lineman. They beat this team that nobody else seemed to be able to beat, and nobody beats up Mahomes like this. Nobody. Nobody beats the Chiefs like this in this whole run that they've had, and yet we did. The city that the city and the team that people doubted all year because we didn't go through the gauntlet of the AFC. We didn't go through Burrow and we didn't go through Lamar, even though we beat both of them in the regular season. We didn't have to play Josh Allen in the playoffs. We didn't have to play, CJ Stroud, the up and coming star. We didn't have to, play Justin Herbert. We did it. And we did it in a way that nobody thought was possible. And maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's the reason it just hasn't clicked in my brain that, you know what, we are that team. But throughout my whole life, even when the Phillies were at their apex, we weren't able to consistently prove. We had 2008, and then we dominated in 09, in 10, and 11 when we had the magic rotation. Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, Roy Oswalt. When we had all of those guys and we still had our core, it still didn't work. 2017, the Eagles were the best team in football, and then they lose their starting quarterback, who's going to be the MVP, to a torn ACL. So even when we've touched the best, we are the best, clearly. There was always a, yeah, but. Oh, you're the best baseball team for 4 years in a row? All right, well, you're not winning a World Series. We did in 08, but I mean after 08. You're the best football team in 2017? Okay, yeah, you won the Super Bowl, but Nick Foles, Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is never the same. It's the nightmare scenario that is still one of the most unprecedented things that's ever happened to a championship team in the history of professional sports. And then this team comes along. Saquon drops that ball against the Falcons. They get smashed by the Bucs. They barely beat the Saints. And you think back and you're like, man, the three toughest games of the season were all against NFC South teams. And you look at what this team did from then on out. They just bullied you relentlessly. It's truly, truly remarkable to think we are sitting here a week removed from the Super Bowl and this team, like, for whatever the final score says, that's not what I have in my mind. 40-6 is what sticks in my head. 34-0 with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. The fact that Nick Sirianni had a Gatorade bath before Mahomes uncorked that crazy deep ball touchdown against backups. For all the Chiefs fans that want to say this is going to be a one of the best throws that no one's ever going to remember. Sure, it was a great throw. Make sure you talk about who they were against. Sidney Brown playing safety. McCullough playing safety. I mean, this doesn't happen to Philly. This doesn't happen to us. We don't get this. We never have. And now it's here. And there's no reason to suggest that they can't go back and do it again next year, which is just as shocking as them winning the Super Bowl the way that they did. Because we're programmed as Philly fans to think, no, we don't get this. This can't be happening. And yet it happened. We're programmed to think not only of the negatives, but then to immediately move on to next year. A good friend of the show, Ryan Kakaiko, one of my good friends from growing up, texted me last week, like 3 days after the Super Bowl, off-season predictions. Here's what I think is going to happen. Because that's how we operate, right? We operate onto, okay, we got this one, and we're going to celebrate it, and we're going to give them the love that they deserve. Because nobody celebrates a championship like Philadelphia. Nobody. And the parade was evident of all of that. But after we celebrate, and sometimes even before, or while during, we just think of what's next. We're almost like ready to get hurt again after having the best fucking thing we've ever had in our lives. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It hasn't sunk in. And for us, as Eagles fans, we get to carry this with us for probably until they're eliminated next year, or maybe they're back trying to win another Super Bowl. For everyone else, they're ready to move on. They're talking about the combine. They're talking about the draft. They're talking about free agency. And we're going to sit here and hold on to this win for as long as we possibly can, forever. We're always going to have this. Yeah, Mahomes and Hurts in Super Bowls 1-1 each, but it feels heavily slanted towards the Eagles because the first one 2 years ago was a really close game. And this one, not so much. Hurts also beat Mahomes head-to-head in the regular season last year, so maybe that's part of it. But what I love so much about this team is, as I've sat here and talked about, A, how much it meant to the city, but B, this mentality of just moving on to the next thing. That's what these guys say. I had zero issue with AJ Brown's Instagram post and his comments about on to the next one. And DeVonta Smith in the mic'd up saying, like, we got some ground to make up. We got to play catch up here. Jalen Hurts already focusing on next year and the journey. That's how Eagles fans think. This team, you know, Saquon talking about why can't we start a dynasty? Because this brand of football that they play, I'll tell you what, there's not going to be enough changes in the offseason for someone to match the talent and everything else that we have on this Eagles roster. So why not? Why can't it be us? Why can't, when everyone's sitting here talking about Mahomes and the Chiefs being the ones with the dynasty, why can't it be the Eagles? And what do they have to do to get there? And that's how this team is wired. People can say whatever the fuck they want about Jalen Hurts for the rest of his career, but goddamn, that dude is a Super Bowl champion at the highest level. A lot of people trying to compare this Eagles team to past teams, right? I think there's a very strong case to be made that it's arguably the best Super Bowl winning team ever. If you're singling out a single season, it has as much talent on its roster as the 2007 Patriots, which by the way, they did not win a Super Bowl. The Eagles did. You can look back to the 2000s Ravens and how good that defense was. They had Trent Dilfer throwing the rock. And no disrespect to Trent Dilfer, he's not Jalen Hurts. And even when the Chiefs completely sold out against the run, which still baffles my mind, that not once in that game did they at all adjust and say no. Like they were willing to die on that hill that they were not going to let Saquon kill them. And congrats, Saquon didn't kill you. But also he kind of did. Because while you were so focused on Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts ate you alive. That defense ate you alive. They did not have a shot in that game. Not with the way those boys came out and played. I love this team so much. Howie Roseman has a case to say that he had the single greatest offseason that any general manager has ever had. And that's including arguably one of the biggest whiffs of the offseason on signing Bryce Huff. Now, did Howie know that Zach Bond was going to be Zach Bond? Of course not. But he saw what was there. Was there a chance that he could come in and be a starter at linebacker? Absolutely. And he was incredible. Pat Surtain's a great player. Myles Garrett, all the other guys who were nominated for Defensive Player of the Year, totally deserving. Zach Bond was the best defensive player in the NFL this season. Case in point, the Super Bowl. The draft picks, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. Quinyon had a pick to seal the game against the Commanders. Cooper DeJean puts the first dagger in with the pick six off of Patrick Mahomes. I love this team so goddamn much. And yet, we're on to next year. Because as we, as Philadelphia Eagles fans, have spent the last week plus celebrating, as did the team, they celebrated hard. We follow what our quarterback says. Keep the main thing the main thing. The main thing is winning Super Bowls, not just one, winning Super Bowls. It's remarkable. It's incredible. It fills my heart with such immense joy to watch this group of fucking dummies celebrate the way that they did on Friday and go up there and hold the mic and say, yeah, we're not done. And saying it with their fucking chest. Because this is new for us. This idea that after all the stuff that happened in 2017, and no matter where you went in the city of Philadelphia, you could start up a conversation in 2018. You know, from the time they won the Super Bowl to week one, half the people wanted Nick Foles, half the people wanted Carson Wentz. But the one thing we all agreed on was that there's a problem. There's a problem with all of this because we have a franchise quarterback going into year three coming off of an ACL tear. Who is looking over his shoulder at a guy who's got a statue out in front of the stadium? Interesting question. I wonder who the statue player will be for this Super Bowl, for this team. What the moment is that'll be immortalized outside of Lincoln Financial Field for decades to come. I carry so much happiness knowing that while this is new for me and it's new for the team and it's new for all who support the Philadelphia Eagles, we all are kind of in it together. This city was broken with what happened with Carson. I remember, I think on this podcast, talking about how hard it was for me, watching Carson Wentz go. This guy I had so much stock in. I was so invested in Carson Wentz. And we didn't even know what was happening when Jalen Hurts got picked in the second round. We had no idea what was going to come. We were in this weird purgatory of like, yeah, cool, we got our one, but not getting there anytime soon. Thanks, Carson. And because of that, we looked at this group. We looked at Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson and BG and Fletcher Cox and all these guys. And we held them up because they were the ones that did it. And that was the last we were going to have. They were going to be gone. And in 2022, all of a sudden, it's like, holy shit, we're back. Holy shit, we're back. Jalen Hurts could have won MVP that year easily, finished second. I'm so thankful for this team. And as we navigate through whatever this future is, and maybe they never go back, maybe they never win another one, that's possible. It is so awesome. Knowing that when the last seconds ticked off and the Eagles were Super Bowl champions, that next year we didn't have to sit and worry about, hey, is Nick Foles going to be the starter or is Carson Wentz going to come back? We didn't have to worry about, hey, is Kenny Pickett going to take over for Jalen Hurts? And that's a new thing for this city. Dominant championships. I mean, again, it's 1983 Sixers. You can look, I mean, the city's divided on this with the Big Five, but like Villanova, I'm a big Villanova basketball fan. Villanova dominates in 2018. Dante DiVincenzo, that team. I mean, that's like the only thing in my life I can really compare it to, but I love Villanova basketball. It doesn't hold a candle to my like to the Eagles, especially not to the city. When the city split in all these different college basketball, slices. This just feels so different and so special. And it's not done yet. It was almost like Nick Foles holding up the Lombardi Trophy was close the book. That's how I felt. I'm not going to sit here and say for everyone in Philadelphia, but it felt like a movie. It felt like, all right, we went to the movie. It's over. This feels like season two of a Netflix show where we don't know how it's going to end yet. The ending of the 2017 team was so clean. And it was so weird and improbable that I almost knew in my gut that, like, yeah, that's not happening again. And it damn near almost happened the next year if Alshon Jeffrey holds on to the ball. Maybe they make it to the NFC Championship game and they make another run. But this is a TV, this is a series. If season one was getting to the Super Bowl and losing. And season two is, or season one's the transition from Carson to Jalen, ending with them losing in the Super Bowl. And then the start of season two is them failing and flopping their way out of the season the way that they did, the collapse, only to have the end of season three or season two, whatever I'm on, my analogy starting to fall apart here. But the ending of that point in the season being win the Super Bowl, what happens next? And so I will continue to sit and reflect on what this Super Bowl is and how it feels to me and the joy that this team has brought me, knowing that 6 months from now, 7 months from now, season four is coming out. And what will that season bring? And I'm so excited. And I'm so happy for the city of Philadelphia. I'm so happy for my friends, my family, for the players, for Vito, who was out partying with Saquon after the parade. I'm so happy for that because that's not something that we're supposed to have. We're not supposed to beat the Chiefs 34-0, 40-6. That's not what we're supposed to do. And yet, we did it. With a couple of those old vets who've been here, Jake Elliott, Rick Lovato, obviously BG, Lane, and the guys who aren't here, but that we will always associate with this team. It's fucking special, man. It's special. And it's something that for all you people out there who want to say, yeah, it's just sports, it's just the Super Bowl, it's just football, you don't get it. And that's okay. You don't have to. But for us, like grandma got ran over by a reindeer, right? As for me and grandpa, we believe. We believe in what this means. We know what this impact is on the city of Philadelphia. The generations of people, the memories that have been made, the bonds between families, fathers, sons, daughters, mothers. It's the fucking best. It's the best. All right. Quick break. Come back. Talk a little NFL, a little more Eagles. And yeah. We'll be right back. All right. Before we get into the kind of state of the NFL stuff that I want to do, I just want to touch on a couple of other things with the Eagles and just kind of how remarkable this whole thing was and just kind of individual shout outs to these guys because they deserve it. And honestly, this whole thing still is just rattling around in my brain. Obviously and deservedly, so much of the credit from this game goes to the defense. And there's still people out there who want to doubt Jalen Hurts. And I'm like, or slight Jalen or hold something against that. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know what else you need to see, man. I mean, they held Saquon to 57 yards rushing and Jalen diced them up. Like, I don't know what else you can say. That guy is cold-blooded. And I kind of alluded to it in the first part of the podcast. Talking about Jalen and how people are trying to compare him to some of the best teams and compare this team to some of the best teams. And the one I've heard a lot is the Seahawks, and those Russell Wilson teams. And I could see that, they both throw a great deep ball. They both are really mobile, especially the early years with Russ. And their ability to step up clutch, the reliance on the run game and a really good defense. Jalen's a much better quarterback at this point throwing the football than Russ was. Russ couldn't throw over the middle of the field. I know statistically you look at Jalen and it says some of that stuff, but a lot of his big throws are, the deep crosser from Dallas Goedert. I think he uses the middle of the field better and more often and more efficiently than people say. Yes, the strengths of his games are quick passes, quick slants, and then the deep ball. But I just think as an overall player, I really feel like Jalen's more accomplished. And you look back to the two Super Bowls that Russ went to with the Seahawks, Jalen was way better in both of those games than Russell Wilson was. And I get like Russ was going up against the Broncos defense, and well, the Seahawks defense really led the way there. And again, Marshawn and some of the offensive stuff that we saw from the Seahawks was impressive. And then it goes up against the Patriots defense and Belichick and that team in was it 2014, 2013. It was a really good defense, and if they hand the ball off to Marshawn instead of throw it, who knows, right? Maybe we're talking about Russ with two Super Bowls and the conversation around Russ is a little bit different. I really feel in my gut like Jalen Hurts is a special guy. He's obsessed with winning. He's obsessed with getting better. He's obsessed with, I mean, you saw it from all the clips, like him riding Space Mountain or whatever in Disney World and being, or Tron, and being very unenthused with the whole thing, which is just hilarious and amazing. He's just a special guy. And, Russ had a weird personality, but it was that cheesy, corny shit, Jalen is super authentic. He's just a different cat, and he's cool as fuck. Like, no one watched Russell Wilson and was like, wow, that guy's really cool. It's like, no, that guy's been making dad jokes since he was like 16. Like, that's the kind of Russell Wilson stuff that I just don't think you can compare to Jalen. And I love the guy. To me, he's got that. And we've talked about it on the pod. We talked about it with Ryan Leaf when he came on the pod. Like, the difference to me when drafting these quarterbacks high in the first round and the success rate and how low it is on first round quarterbacks, even just to get like a Baker Mayfield or a Ryan Tannehill, it's so difficult to do. And all these guys who are drafted are talented enough. You hear quarterbacks say that all the time. Like, every guy in a quarterback room is talented enough to be a starting quarterback. The difference is pocket awareness, mental processing, understanding the offense, decision making, all this stuff, the speed of which you can get the ball out and your brain processes where to go. That's the difference. The talent's all there. So to me, when these guys are getting drafted, the thing that the NFL has never figured out is, that's 6 to 7 inches between the ears. Are you able to deliver the ball quickly, efficiently, on time where it's supposed to be? Are you able to see the field the way that you need to in order to be an elite level quarterback? And Jalen has proven that on not only can he do that, 2 years ago, he's the runner up for MVP. And now everyone's talking about, well, he can't throw. He didn't have to throw. They didn't want to throw. It was a choice. It's not because he can't. because they didn't need to. They didn't want to. And so then it comes down to when they ask you, can you connect on a big third down, a big fourth down? Can you hit the deep ball when you need to? Is Jalen going to step up and do it? And in the biggest moments, ever since the national championship game when he got pulled, the biggest moments for him in his career, the SEC championship game when Tua gets hurt and he goes in, the Super Bowls, taking over for Carson Wentz, all these really big moments of his career, they are all pretty much to a T perfection. He plays his best in the biggest moments. The fumble against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, like, yeah, that killed him. But he shows up when the light is at its brightest. When he had his first career start against the Saints in 2020, and he lit him up. Somebody just posted all of the highlights from that game, and I was like, wow, he's wearing number two, and how different things are now. I mean, 4 years in the league, 4 years as a starting quarterback, 4 full years as a starting quarterback. He has four playoff appearances, two Super Bowl appearances, two NFC championship wins, and a Super Bowl win. I mean, and by the way, he's 26. Like, let's sprinkle that in. The man's 26 years old. He is a stud among studs. And while Russell Wilson, who was a really good player for the Seahawks for a long time, he's the guy who's out there buying, what was it? He had 13 bathrooms or something, and he had more wins, or he had more bathrooms than he had wins when he was in Denver. Jalen Hurts has a modest sized house. For some people, it's like maybe your second sized home that you buy, couple of bedrooms. Doesn't need anything else. People ask him questions on Super Bowl row when he's going through all of the interviews about his mentality, saving money, not needing a lot, his ability to stay humble and hungry. And yeah, as some of those checks continue to come in, is he gonna branch out? Sure. But he said something there. It's like, just because you can buy something doesn't mean that you need to. Just because you can have something doesn't mean that you should. He's just a different cat, man. And I love him to death. The skill guys, Saquon, AJ, Devontae, Goddard, fucking Jahan Dotson. Eagles won that trade. And they won that trade because Jahan Dotson made two really big plays in the Super Bowl and had 42 yards. And the Eagles don't win that. I'm not saying they're not going to win that game. They probably would have anyway, given how dominant the rest of the game played out. But getting that first catch all the way down there, almost scoring the touchdown, setting up the tush push, like that was a huge swing in that game. That was a moment. It's like, boom, butterflies are gone. We're in this shit. And they called Jahan Dotson's number, a guy who I made the joke on the pod before, and I've said it to anyone I've watched the games. There's like the scheduled, all right, this is the Jahan Dotson play in every Eagles game. It's like, yep, there's the one catch for Jahan Dotson in like every game. And a guy who went from getting, 90 to 100 targets when he was in Washington to 25, 30 over the course of the whole season. If that, I mean, talk about staying ready and being ready. Guy who was a number one wide receiver, dominant college football player, goes to Washington, is a top option in Washington, getting the ball thrown to him all the time because Washington was losing like crazy when he was there. To now, your role gets diminished, but will you show up in the biggest plays? And Jahan did. And he's a Super Bowl champ. And he's one of those people that's not going to get talked about, but he deserves his flowers. So shout out to Jahan and all the skill guys. Obviously, AJ, Devontae. I love Devontae Smith so much. I mean, he legitimately might be, he's in the running for like one of my favorite Eagles of all time. I love him. He's a quiet assassin. The Slender Man. I mean, he's fucking awesome, dude. Like, how do you watch that kid and not love him? And then another guy, every moment, there was a great picture of him losing the Louisiana State Championship in the Superdome when he was in high school and crying on the field after. And it's like that dude just won a Super Bowl there in his hometown. He doesn't ask for anything. He dropped the ball against the Commanders. Right, in the first loss that they had, a loss that ended up being really pivotal in the season. I dropped it. I dropped it. Should have caught it. That's on me. We lost this game because of me. You don't teach that shit, man. You can't teach that shit. He's such an easy guy to root for. And his career, I mean, game-winning walk-off national championship catch against Georgia when everyone was focused on Jerry Jeudy and Ruggs and hey, Devontae Smith over here. By the way, I'm gonna win the Heisman next year. Or 2 years later, whatever it ended up being. I mean, he's just a star. He's a star, but in the perfect way. I love that guy. And AJ Brown. Let's talk about AJ Brown for a second, because AJ Brown gets so much heat. I mean, the amount of people who call him a diva, the amount of people, especially down here, Washington fans fucking hate him. They want him to be T.O. They want him to be Stephon Diggs. They want him to be a problem. First thing AJ Brown did getting off the plane back from New Orleans was visiting the kid from who had gotten injured during the plane crash in Philly a few weeks ago. First thing he did. The clip of him when he was in Tennessee talking about his mental health, having suicidal thoughts, and how he wanted to come out because he wanted to help people. He wanted to tell people about it because he wanted to help people. But yeah, no, that guy's a fucking diva. Him reading a book on the sideline makes him a diva. He wants to be the best. He said in his post, like the journey, he wants to be the guy out there making all the plays. I fucking want that out of my wide receiver. I don't want you to be an asshole. I don't want you to be throwing temper tantrums in the locker room. People say, "Oh, Jeff, what about his answer about passing?" The passing game was a problem. He didn't come out there and said, "Well, my quarterback's not throwing me the ball." He didn't come out there and say, "Oh, coaching's bad." What was the problem for the Eagles team going into that game? That was whatever game that was right before they played Pittsburgh. It was throwing the ball. He's one of the highest paid wide receivers in football. He wants to make an impact. He wasn't mad that they won. He wants to make plays. He came here to be the number one. And now he's probably going to go down as the best wide receiver in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. No one's going to remember him as a Titan. You're going to remember him as an Eagle. And he's a good guy who gives a shit about people. And I'm sorry that the most dirt that you can bring up on AJ Brown is that he wants to catch more balls and play a bigger role in the team winning. That doesn't mean he's unhappy. Or that he reads a book on the sideline to get himself in the right mindset. Fuck all with all that. AJ Brown's a stud. Dallas Goedert, I love you. I think he's the most underappreciated player on the team, especially what he does in the blocking game. He's a star. And if he was playing on any other team, he'd be a consensus top five tight end in football. But because some of the injury stuff, he's had some bad luck with injuries, stuff that isn't his fault. You know, getting face masked by a Washington player and dragged into the ground, or somebody snapping his arm. And yet all he does is come back a week earlier than anyone thinks he's going to do and plays a massive role in what they're able to do in the run game. Then when you give him the opportunities in big moments, big third down, he catches the ball or he stiff arms a dude into the fucking earth and scores touchdowns. No AJ Brown, no Devontae Smith against the Saints. What happens? They throw the ball to Dallas Goedert. He breaks off a 65-yard run, gets caught at the end. The funny Jordan Mailata unhook the trailer. He makes plays, and he does the nitty-gritty shit that he doesn't get credit for. And on a team that's loaded with so much talent, he gets forgotten in all of that. But he's not forgotten by me and by ball knowers. I hope he stays an Eagle for a long time. I love Dallas Goedert. And yes, I have the FCS tie. I watched him play football in Harrisonburg when South Dakota State came to Harrisonburg my senior year. I watched him catch a one-handed touchdown in the same corner of the end zone that I was standing in. And I said, that guy's going to be an Eagle. I hope that guy's an Eagle. The Zach Ertz replacement. He blocks better than Ertz. He's a better athlete than Ertz. Not a better route runner. Doesn't have the hands. Ertz is still the best tight end in Eagles history. But Goddard, that's a cold motherfucker, man. And he does it all without ever batting an eye, saying shit. Love that guy. And then Saquon. I love him. I love him so much it hurts. I love that guy. He's so hard to root against. I know it from all the Commanders fans around here. Him picking up the ball boy that he saw on the side of the street at the parade, being like, "Why are you not a part of the parade?" Lifting him over the gates and saying, "You're coming with me." He's a good guy. He's a great dad. He's a damn good football player. He's a special dude, man. He is just special. And it's hard with how good Shady and Westbrook, Wilbert Montgomery, Ricky Waters, Deuce Staley, go through the history. I mean, there's a lot of good Eagles running backs over the years. I don't know, man. No one's better than Saquon. And Shady will probably, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what the rest of Saquon's career looks like here in Philadelphia. But even if Shady has all the records, except for individual single season records, because Saquon's already broken all of those. But the longevity records, carries, touchdowns, total yards as an Eagle, even if Saquon doesn't touch those, I feel comfortable saying that Saquon's the best Eagles running back of all time because of this year, because they won the Super Bowl, because he broke the record for most rushing yards in a single season ever. Eric Dickerson, you want to have the regular season record? Cool. I like this record better because this record is a Super Bowl, something that you don't have, Eric Dickerson. To continue to be salty and say that, oh, I don't want Saquon to break it. His record doesn't count. Cool. I'll take this record. Remember all that talk, week 18? He can break the record. Yeah, we wanted him for the playoffs, though, man. And what he did against Green Bay, what he did against the Rams, 200 yards in the snow in a playoff game, man. In a game and one snap the next week, he had three touchdown runs over 60 yards. Do you have any idea how batshit fucking insane that is? Special cat. And the thing I love about Saquon is that he makes sure everybody knows that he doesn't have the year he has without the big uglies up front. I don't know if there's a single more impressive thing this year on the Philadelphia Eagles than what Cam Jurgens did. About a year ago, a friend of mine asked me, who is on your Mount Rushmore of Philadelphia athletes? I had to put Jason Kelce on. It was borderline impossible not to. And this is across all four sports. Bringing us a Super Bowl. The speech, his in, how he's ingratiated himself into the city. Spending his whole career here. I mean, how many? Six-time All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer. I mean, he is. He's an almost perfect embodiment of Philadelphia. Chuck Bednarik, who many people would have on the Mount Rushmore of Philadelphia athletes, two-way player, was a center on offense. Played linebacker and center. It's almost too perfect that Jason Kelce has to be on that Mount Rushmore. And what Cam Jurgens did, the pressure of being a second-round pick hand-selected by Jason Kelce as his replacement, coming in this year, taking on immense responsibility, filling shoes that people thought no one can do what Jason Kelce did. And he does it. The tush push is just as successful. Yeah, it doesn't look as dominant at times, but it's just as successful as it was in the past. His athleticism. Well, Jason Kelce's the most athletic center of all time. Cam Jurgens doing all the same stuff. And then battling in the NFC Championship game when he couldn't start, but he was there, and Landon gets pulled from that game because he's battling his ass off, only for Cam Jurgens to step in. Only for Cam Jurgens to come in with a herniated disc in his back, with Frankie Louvu jumping on top of him, five straight plays in a dominant effort. We talk about Lane, we talk about Jordan, we talk about Landon, Mekhi Becton, the story. Cam seems to be the forgotten guy there, and yet I think he had the hardest job this year. Not just because of the nature of the center position and how Jeff Stoutland uses him in that offense, but because of the role that he was filling and the shoes that he was filling. And that was everyone's number one concern about the Eagles coming into the season. How do you replace Jason Kelce? Once the season started, it didn't get talked about once. Do you have any idea? That is insane. Cam Jurgens was so good filling in for Jason Kelce. Arguably one of the greatest Eagles of all time, one of the best centers of all time. Cam Jurgens was so good at center that it wasn't even a conversation after it being the number one concern everybody had about the Eagles coming into the season. It wasn't even a thought. That's how good Cam Jurgens was. That dude deserves so much fucking credit. As does Jordan Mailata, his best year as a pro, entering his prime, and as Myles Garrett put it, the hardest guy for him to go up against in 2024. That's Myles Garrett. That's arguably the best defensive player in the NFL saying that. That's how good Jordan Mailata is. Landon Dickerson, fucking warrior. No one was topping the Jason Kelce speech from 2018, but man, Landon Dickerson's speech got me fired up. I love that guy. He's awesome. And he's the best left guard in football, and it's not particularly close. Mekhi Becton, the story. It's unbelievable. And he was so good in the Super Bowl. They tried to send Chris Jones at him. Mekhi stood up, took it, gave it right back. I hope they find a way to keep him. And hopefully at a reasonable price. Because my number one concern for the Eagles is getting Zach Bond back, but we'll get there. We got time. And of course, Lane Johnson. Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah, Lane Johnson. He's a man of few words, so I'm not going to spend too many on him. But he doesn't just stop there. The two other guys that need shout outs. And I said this on the pod afterwards. I tweeted this out during the NFC Championship game. No one's going to remember what Tyler Steen did filling in that NFC Championship game. He wasn't going to get the flowers that Saquon or Jalen or the defense or anyone else did in that game. But filling in at left guard, and I mean, after the first couple plays, no one even noticed them. The opening play, they take for a fucking house call. Tyler Steen, I mean, he was supposed to be the right guard. He was going into camp, the starting right guard, and he gets hurt during training camp. Mekhi Becton comes in, takes over at right guard, and he never gets his job back. And it's so easy to let your pride and your ego and your own personal grief like take over in that moment, and he didn't. He waited for his opportunities, and he was so good. He was so good. Filling in for Landon Dickerson, filling in for Mekhi Becton, two different positions along the offensive line, playing next to Lane and Cam, or playing next to Jordan Mailata and Landon Dickerson at center. And then, oh yeah, by the way, now that's going to be Cam Jurgens halfway through that game. And you didn't even notice that he wasn't there. I mean, he deserves so much credit, man. So much credit. And it's hard to be the guy that loses your spot in camp and never gets it back. And it happens in the NFL. It happens. But Tyler Steen, man, when his number got called, he was ready. As was Fred Johnson, who we talked about. There was a big 5-week stretch right when the season, like Jordan Mailata got hurt, I believe, in the Tampa Bay game, missed the missed the next week, or might have been the week before against New Orleans, but it was early in the season. He missed 5 weeks, four games. Fred Johnson, don't get me wrong, he wasn't Mailata. He wasn't the game changer that Mailata is along that offensive line, but he was really good. He's everything you want a backup to be in, man. And he's a vibes guy. Any of the social media clips you see of him, he's a vibes guy. He deserves his credit too. And on the umbrella over that whole offensive line is the best position coach in the NFL, Jeff Stoutland. And as long as he is a member of the Philadelphia Eagles coaching staff, I have full confidence in what the Eagles offensive line will be able to do forever. As long as he's there, he is a bad motherfucker, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And run game coordinator, everything else he does, the offensive line, he's brilliant. And he coaches in ways that I don't know how it resonates, but he created arguably the best left tackle in football in 5 years with a dude who had never touched an American football before. That's insane. He coached up a young kid to replace a Hall of Fame center in 2 years and did it with flying colors. I know Eagles fans know enough at this point to give Jeff Stoutland his flowers, to give him the respect, and it still doesn't seem like enough. That's how good Jeff Stoutland is. Defensive side of the ball, that whole D-line, man. Shout out to everybody. Milton Williams, love that guy. He's going to get paid, and he should. Josh Sweat had to take a pay cut to come back to the city of Philadelphia. Was asked, didn't ask for a trade, but he was given permission to seek his own trade. Nobody wanted him. Came back to Philly on a discount. Balled out in the first part of the season. Sack numbers went down as the season went on. Pressures were still pretty good. Battled through a couple of little nagging injuries and saved his best for the Super Bowl. 2.5 sacks. Unbelievable. Jalen Carter. None of this is possible without Jalen Carter. And when you look at the Bills, the Ravens, the Texans, Jalen Carter is what makes all of this possible. I don't like to toot my own horn a ton when I'm right on this podcast, but I nailed the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl. I defy you to go find people who thought the Eagles were going to blow them out in both games. I thought multiple touchdowns in both games. I was right. I didn't expect the two blowouts that we had, but I was right about that part. The thing I was most right about was how the Chiefs were going to have to handle Jalen Carter. Trey Smith, great player. Creed Humphrey, very good player at center. The two best offensive linemen on the Chiefs had to double team Jalen Carter because he is that dominant. Not just like, oh, yeah, we have to give him a chip block here. You know, no, like they had to double team them with two very, very good offensive linemen, which is so difficult. So difficult to do. To force two awesome offensive linemen like that. It's insane. It's insane. And because of that, Nolan Smith, Josh Sweat, one-on-ones on the outside with inferior tackles. Joe Tooney, borderline Hall of Fame offensive lineman. They always say you don't choose to play tackle. Usually, or sorry, you don't choose to play guard. You usually get forced to play guard because you don't have the length. You don't have the frame. You might have the size and the strength and the speed, but you may not have the strength or the size, rather, the length that you really need to play left tackle. And that was evident. And Josh Sweat ruined him. But when you have a guy like Jalen Carter who's going to eat up double teams and force one-on-ones for everyone else in that defensive line, that's what you need to beat guys with a four-man rush. I'm not sure if it was Fred Robbins or who the guy, there was a big defensive tackle in the middle of that Giants team in 2007 when they upset Brady and they were able to generate pressure with just the front four, and they would slide Strahan into like the three technique and forget, let him get one-on-ones. But they had disruption from the middle. Because that's what you have to do if you're going to beat these all-time greats, Brady, Mahomes, Peyton, any of those guys. And the only way you can rush from four is if you have guys who are getting double teamed who are either A, still winning, or B, allowing all three of the other guys to go one on one and let them eat. And Jalen Carter does that. Jordan Davis does that, especially in the run game. I mean, Jordan Davis was getting double teamed and still sacked Mahomes. Defensive line's fun, man. Love that group. And shout out to Clint Hurt, Coach Hurt. That dude. He's the most defensive line looking coach I've ever seen. If you went to typecasting and said, "Hey, I'm making a movie about an NFL defense, about an NFL team, and who are we gonna get to play the defensive line coach?" It's Clint Hurt. It's a bad motherfucker. Linebackers. I mean, shout out to Oren Burks and the job he did, but N'Kobe, wish he was out there. I hope we get him back earlier than we think next year. I said it before on the pod, I'll say it again. Zach Bond is the best defensive player in the NFL in 2024. The interception he had, of course, having sweat driving Tooney back into Mahomes' legs to make the throw just a little bit off, but to dive out like that. He had the second highest pass coverage rate grade in the NFL among all players. Secondary safety, he had a 90 percentile grade. 90th percentile. Like, that's how good he was. In coverage. That's not including what he did rushing the passer. That's not including what he did in the run game. He is just an absolute fucking beast. Credit to him, man. Fucking credit to him. Secondary, Q, Coop, Slay, CJ, GJ, Reed Blankenship. What a group. And Slay may or may not be here next year. He might go get one more contract. But for him at his age to do that, like, truly, truly spectacular stuff. So just love it, man. Absolutely love it. All right. Enough Eagles talk. Take one more break. We'll come back and I'll finally get to this state of the NFL as we wrap up the 2024 season. All right, let's wrap up this pod with a little bit of final thoughts here from the 2024 season and just kind of a state as to where we're at heading into the offseason. Obviously, over the next few months, there's going to be a lot of changes. There's going to be trades that we didn't see coming. There's going to be signings that we don't know about. There's going to be surprises. There's going to be things that maybe we do expect to happen. But as we sit here, currently, February 17th, 2025. This is kind of my overall thoughts as to where we stand in the National Football League. In the AFC, I think we're going to look next year and feel pretty good about where we're at, and that I'm not sure all too much is going to change. The last 2 years, we've had the same division winners: the Bills, the Ravens, the Texans, and the Chiefs. Not to say that it's guaranteed to happen that way again. We know Cincinnati and Joe Burrow are hungry after missing the playoffs this year, but they'll likely be moving on from T. Higgins. It's a big deal. And he could end up being a prize possession here for another team that's willing to give him a big contract, a team like maybe the Chargers, who in year two with Harbaugh are a team to keep your eye out on. But if you go through the AFC East, right, if we go division by division, Dolphins kind of feels like it's going to be the same old thing. You never know, right? But Mike McDaniel, Tua, Tyreek Hill likely not going to be on the Dolphins next year. I think we understand where they're at. Year one with Mike Vrabel for the Pats, could that be a surprise burst team? I expect them to win more games. Maybe backdoor their way into a playoff spot. They have a lot of cap space, but they have such little talent. The disparity between the talent on the Patriots versus the talent on the Eagles is night and day. You know, the Eagles' third or fourth best defensive lineman would probably still be the best defensive lineman for the Patriots with Christian Barrymore. Like, if you swap Christian Barrymore and Milton Williams, getting a pretty similar player. In fact, I think Milton Williams is honestly even better. The Jets, who knows what the fuck's going to happen there? We know they're moving on from Rodgers. We know there's talent on that team. What is Aaron Glenn going to do to get that team ready? Who's going to play quarterback? Are they going to draft somebody? Are they going to make a trade for somebody? A lot of questions in New York. AFC East feels like it's going to be the same, especially with Josh Allen coming off of the MVP season. NFC North feels like it's two teams. Steelers, right? There's some buzz about maybe a Trevor Lawrence trade to the Steelers. That'd be fun. I'd be in favor of that. But realistically, the Browns, we know we don't have to worry about. It's probably going to come down to the Bengals and Ravens and whether the Bengals can shake off this slow start thing that they have, whether or not the defense gets fixed. If they lose T. Higgins, how are they replacing that? Yoshi's a great player, a great slot receiver. I think they're going to miss T. Higgins' production. Now, granted, T. Higgins has missed a lot of games over the last couple of years, so it wouldn't be completely impossible for that offense to be that good because of how good Joe Burrow is, one of only three quarterbacks to ever beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. So, Cincy, definitely going to be around. But now that Cousin Lou's gone, who I still think is a very good defensive coordinator who was working with not a whole lot in Cincy, I still don't love that firing. I feel like the Bengals kind of need a big year. And the fact that they have Trey Hendrickson under one more, the leading sack getter in the NFL, they have a contract for one more year. They're only going to be able to keep two of the three of Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Trey Hendrickson. It's probably going to be T. Higgins on the outside looking in, especially because that Bengals defense needs pieces. And then for the Ravens, and I would say the Bills are kind of in the same spot. Where's the talent? Where's the talent that's going to get you past Kansas City, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, right? To beat them, you need really good defensive play. The Bengals in the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago, cornerbacks played out of their mind in that game. Defensive line was hungry, getting after the pass rusher. They stopped any sort of running game, basically put the whole game on Mahomes. And Joe Burrow played exceptional football, and they won the football game. The Bengals need, sorry, not the Bengals. The Ravens and Bills need to look at the teams that have beaten the Chiefs, primarily Tampa Bay, New England, Philadelphia. The teams that have beaten them and how they did it. Excellent defensive play with game-changing type guys or game-changing type coaches. In the Eagles' case, you had both. You had Fangio and then all of that talent that was completely different from what the team was 2 years before. And also playing on a not slippery field. Sorry, still not bitter. The Ravens and Bills are missing that. I mean, yeah, Marlon Humphrey's great. Kyle Hamilton's a stud. Roquan Smith are great. Who on the defensive line on either of those teams scares you? I said it at the time. I hated the Bills spending all that money on Von Miller. And yeah, Von Miller made a big play against the Ravens. But these are two teams that they need to hit on some draft picks. The window is now. The time to hit on the draft picks was 3, 4 years ago. We knew what the Chiefs were 3, 4 years ago. We knew that that was the hurdle that both the Ravens and Bills had to get over with their MVP quarterbacks. And the Bills tried. The guys they brought in, the guys they drafted, never quite worked out in the way that I think they hoped for. Gregory Rousseau, pretty good player, right? But like, you don't have the game-changing type guy there. You don't have the game wrecker. And the Bills will have some cap space. The Ravens, a little tighter, but they can make some things happen. They need to improve those defenses. Because in the playoffs, that's how you beat Mahomes. The defense has to play out of its mind. And as we saw, yeah, the Bengals did beat the Chiefs, but they went up against the Rams. They didn't really have a chance. I mean, yeah, that game was close. Don't get me wrong. But the Rams were the better football team that year. And they beat the Chiefs because the Bengals defense played so unbelievably well in the AFC Championship game. They played above what their expectations should be based off the talent that was there. And then when they went up against another really good team, the defense couldn't get back to that level again. As good as Joe Burrow was, And for how bad that offensive line was, too, by the way. The Bengals still managed to get all the way to the Super Bowl. But in order to beat Mahomes in the playoffs, the defense has to be spectacular. I think the Ravens are a little closer right now, even though, yes, they did lose to the Bills. But that's why getting that one seed so important. Because for the Bills, you had to go through a really good Ravens team. For the Ravens, you would have had to go through a really good Bills team and then beat. And then beat Kansas City. The Texans are an interesting team. Year three with CJ Stroud, what does that look like? But again, Colts, Jags, Titans, feels like it's going to be more of the same. We'll see what happens in Jacksonville. Liam Cohen. Maybe they do move off of Trevor Lawrence. I don't know. Feel like there's enough talent there that they can be a little bit more competitive. Dougie P didn't work out. But I don't think we're sitting here a year from now being like, wow, what a run from the Jags. Or Anthony Richardson. Wow, he really turned the corner this year. I hope I'm wrong. I like Shane Steichen. I like Anthony Richardson. Just don't see that happening. The AFC West is where I think the most chaos can happen. If you look at Jim Harbaugh's track record, year two is really the year where it's like, boom, we go from winning 10 games plus in our first year to now we're here. They have a ton of cap space. They'll make some adjustments. Khalil Mack at this age, I don't know how much you're getting from him, but obviously Joey Bosa is a stud. They have a lot of studs on that defense. Derwin James still playing at an incredibly high level. T. Higgins is a really intriguing option there. Their offensive line, when they're healthy, is top five in the league, if not even higher. They could be that third team when you're talking about best offensive lines. The Chargers are really interesting. And the Broncos, year two with Bo Nix and Sean Payton together, what do they do now that they have full access of their cap space that's not being dragged down by Russell Wilson? What are they able to add to a defense that was already one of the best defenses in the NFL this year? You know, to a team that traded away Jerry Jeudy mid-season and now has some more cap space. Maybe T. Higgins goes there. Pair him up with Courtland Sutton. It's going to be interesting. The AFC West is where I think the most shifting can happen. The Chiefs have won the AFC West in like 10 consecutive years or something, or 11 years. It's a crazy streak how many consecutive years they've won the AFC West. Right now, I'm not going to pick against the Chiefs, despite the fact that they're losing a ton of talent, or at least there's a lot of free agents, and I'm curious to see who they're able to keep. Trey Smith, that right guard, is a huge one, as we saw when the Chiefs struggle to win. When it rarely happens, it's usually because their offensive line isn't that great, so do they spend that money there? But Justin Reed, who's one of the most important pieces of that defense, he's a free agent. Who do they bring in? Who do they keep? Who do they draft? This team has done a very good job at drafting talent at the back end of the first round over the last couple of years, and they're going to have an opportunity to do it again this year. I'm fascinated to know. But remember, Rashee Rice is coming back. Xavier Worthy in year two. We might all think, oh, Big Bad Wolf is gone. No, no shot. Mahomes isn't going anywhere. If anything, he's pissed. Well, he's definitely pissed, but if anything, it's just going to light the fire under him. And depending on what happens over the next, you know, few months in this offseason, I have a feeling come July, as we're getting ready to start turning this whole thing back up again, we're going to be talking about Kansas City. We're going to be talking about Kansas City being, yep. That's who's going to win. That's who's going to be in the Super Bowl again. Maybe not, though. We'll see. The AFC West has some interesting movers and shakers. Even the Raiders. Sam Darnold, maybe? They got cap space. They got money now with the ownership infusion with Tom Brady and his crew. Bring in Pete Carroll. Some stability. Wouldn't sleep on the Raiders. Like some guys they got over there. Christian Wilkins, Max Crosby, obviously. On the NFC side, it's a little bit different. We don't have the tried and true same guys, right? It's the Eagles until it's not the Eagles. That is the overriding sentiment of the NFC. But there's about four teams, four or five teams that are really piquing my interest. And it starts in the NFC East. It's that guy who played in the NFC Championship game. It's that team that played in the NFC Championship game. And that is the Washington Commanders and Jaden Daniels. They have a really good GM. I've seen enough in a year and a half of Adam Peters to believe he's a very good GM. And a lot of people feel, as Myles Garrett is now available, well, why not Washington? They have the draft capital. They have the cap space. And the reason I don't think Myles Garrett is going to go to the Washington Commanders is because he's a good GM. He knows exactly what he's supposed to do, which is build a team, not get one guy. If you have to give two firsts and a third, or two firsts and a second for Myles Garrett for 2 years as he's approaching 30 years old and taking on the cap hit that's going to eat up a bunch of your cap space, you then have to decide, all right, maybe the cap hit this year is not going to be as bad as it will next year because the Browns will have to take on a decent amount of his salary and a decent amount of his cap hit. But that means they have to build everything through free agency. If they go that route, because they are sacrificing what could be vital pieces to the future of their organization. Look at how the Eagles and Howie Roseman built this team. First three rounds over the last 4 years. The tweet's been sent around. I'm sure you all have seen it. I talked about it with Vito on the podcast before. It's insane. The recruitment of talent over the first three rounds, it's an unbelievable run from Howie. And I'm not saying that you have to do that. But one of the most deceptive stats about Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders offense is they're top of the league, not necessarily number one, but they're at the top of the league in time to throw. And time to throw is a misleading stat because time to throw can mean you have a very good offensive line and the quarterback's able to read the field, have time, coverage breaks down, you hit the open guy, you keep moving. But it also can mean your offensive line is shit and you have a really mobile quarterback. Now, of course, you'd rather have more time to throw on average than not. But for Jaden Daniels, there's another level that he can unlock because he is good when he's had time in the pocket. Where if you are allowing him to develop in the pocket, to see the field, to get the ball out on time where it's supposed to be, that's when Jaden can really kill you. I think we've seen enough of Jaden Daniels to be like, if he can elevate his in the pocket stuff, similar to what we talked about with Lamar, he could be an MVP candidate. He's probably already an MVP candidate for next year. But this team needs so much talent. I would rather spend $30 million on Trey Smith as a free agent to come in and shore up right guard, especially with Sam Cosmi being out for the majority of next year, if not all of next year. I'd rather make sure I'm protecting this MVP level player in Jaden Daniels. I'd rather give him another weapon. I'd rather pay T. Higgins and Trey Smith and keep those two first round draft picks over the next couple of years and the extra third or second that it's going to cost to get Myles Garrett, then spend all of that for just Myles Garrett and then get one of those other players. For the Commanders to be a true Super Bowl contender, they need to elevate that whole roster. Yes, they don't have the terrifying edge rusher, and Myles Garrett would be a great addition to any single defense. But Marshon Lattimore, I don't know how much you're getting out of him. And they gave up a third round pick, which they got from Philly. So essentially, you traded Jahan Dotson to get Marshon Lattimore. You know, maybe he's there, but is he a good mentor? Sandstrill is a really good player. I think he's going to continue to be a really good player. Undersized corner, but he's quick. I think he's going to be overall a net positive. But these veterans that you brought in, the Bobby Wagners and Ertz and Eckler and Jeremy Chinn and these guys who are really talented players, I don't know how long term those signings are going to be impactful for this team. It was massive in year one with a young team and a young quarterback and a new coach. But does that look the same next year? Does Zach Ertz hit the wall? Does Bobby Wagner hit the wall at 36 years old? Does Eckler just continue to get injured? Does Jeremy Chinn fall off? It happens quick with a lot of these guys. So they need to kind of move. And a lot of those were 1 year deals anyway. So they need to move. They need to bring in talent. And with the amount of cap space that they have, you keep a couple of those vets that you brought in. You go out and get a couple of names. You don't put yourself in cap hell. And you use those draft picks to surround Jaden Daniels with as much talent as possible. And for God's sakes, fix the offensive line so he doesn't die. So your Super Bowl dreams don't die with him getting smashed into the ground and missing games because of it, if he's able to get caught. But that's also just how freaking good Jaden Daniels is. My other kind of pool of interesting teams that I'm like laser focused on, the NFC North, the Lions, right? They've been the darling of the NFL for the last couple of years. Everyone loves Dan Campbell. This is going to be a huge year for them. You lose both coordinators. We saw what happened in Philly after losing the Super Bowl. And they didn't, this Lions team hasn't even gotten to the Super Bowl. Dan Campbell's only ever coached with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn as his coordinators. We've never seen him as a head coach without those guys. And nailing these hires is really hard. I mean, we saw like Sean Desai and Brian Johnson were not great hires. It was not a good fit in Philadelphia, especially after the disappointment of losing the Super Bowl, a level of disappointment that I know this Lions team is going to be feeling. And obviously, the injuries are the number one thing that you can blame for that Lions defense and the collapse of that team. And obviously, they have a ton of talent, and Dan Campbell's learned a lot about offense and all and scheming and all the stuff that they did with Ben Johnson. But without Ben Johnson, who's calling those plays? How similar can it look to that? Is it still going to be this creative mastermind level shit that they were doing, or do they simplify it and just take the same basic concepts, simplify it, and can the play caller call the right plays, dial up the right things at the right time, the way that Ben Johnson was so consistently good at over the last few years in Detroit? I have a overall kind of skepticism about whether or not this Lions team is going to be able to be as impactful as it was. And yeah, you're going to get Aiden Hutchinson back, and I think the defense overall is going to be better. I said my case about Aaron Glenn, where I'm like, yeah, we saw some great stuff from Aaron Glenn. We also saw some not great stuff from Aaron Glenn. And he got hired as a head coach, I think, mainly because of his personality and the way that he relates to his players. But what is this going to look like moving forward? I don't know. And I think losing Aaron Glenn from the locker room is a big problem. It's going to be really interesting because they have the talent. But again, Jared Goff had his worst game of the year in the biggest moment. And yeah, he didn't throw the pick that Jameson Williams threw, but he made a Commanders defense look really good by throwing a lot of bad balls in that game. And again, I love Jared Goff. I want him to be successful. I'm just skeptical that the Lions are going to be a 14 win team, 15 win team. They're definitely not going to win 15 games again, but I nailing those coordinator hires is so hard. Even for really, really good head coaches, it's really, really hard. And let me look at Sirianni, case in point. First two hot coordinators he hired, like nailed Steichen, Gannon. He was good enough to get them to a Super Bowl, obviously. But you look at Sean Desai, terrible hire. Brian Johnson from within ended up not being a good hire. Fangio, incredible hire this year. Look on the other side, Kellen Moore. There were times this year it didn't look like a great hire. Ultimately, when it mattered most, it turned out to be a very good hire. But can Dan Campbell nail that to keep this team on the same trajectory that they've been going at over the last few years? I have no idea. No idea. The team in the NFC North that I'm most worried as an Eagles fan is the Green Bay Packers. I think they're in this kind of perfect ecosystem right now where Matt LaFleur is a really good coach. Jordan Love's had a couple of seasons of starting, progressively getting better, not making the same dumb mistakes, but also not quite being as explosive as at times. This is still the youngest team in the NFL this year. 2 years in a row, they were the youngest team in the NFL. So that's a big deal. They're learning, they're developing. I still think my favorite T. Higgins landing spot is Green Bay because I think the multiplicity of having all those wide receivers around the same age with similar skill sets is great, but you also don't have that one clear guy that gets you over the top. And I think T. Higgins could be that difference maker for them. Tucker Kraft year two or three, whatever it is for him. And he's a very exciting young player, tight end. The offensive line, they have some cap space they can play with. The defense, I mean, out of all the defenses the Eagles played this postseason and potentially over the course of the entire season, Green Bay might be the best. Jeff Hafley's a really good coordinator, and this was year one for him in the NFL. I think the Packers, like this past year, was when everyone talked about them being stealth Super Bowl contenders because they got hot at the end and they beat the shit out of Cowboys in the playoffs. Like, yeah, who hasn't done that? At least the Cowboys part. I think this is the year. I think this is the year that they're the stealth Super Bowl contenders. And then Minnesota, do they bring back Sam Darnold? You know, do the JJ McCarthy chants start to come in? Like, if I'm Darnold, I'm probably leaving. I don't want JJ McCarthy behind me. I don't want to sign the 1 year, $20 million or 2 years and $40 million deal or whatever. I'd rather go sign in Vegas for 4 years or 5 years and you know, $75 million than, you know, going to back to Minnesota. Even if I loved playing for Kevin O'Connell. Like I think Kevin O'Connell's an awesome coach. I still would rather go somewhere else because at some point, if the demons and how the season ended for Minnesota, it's going to linger with those fans. And the second you have a bad day, you're going to be right back to seeing ghosts in your head. I think Minnesota falls back a little bit, especially if JJ McCarthy comes in there. Maybe they end up looking more like what the Broncos did this year, where the defense is still really solid and the offense has some explosive plays, but you just have this young quarterback who's getting his feet wet in the NFL. If I'm the Vikings, I'd probably move on from Sam Darnold and get the show, you know, get this stuff moving when it comes to JJ McCarthy. But I hope Sam Darnold goes out and finds something somewhere, though. I'm really happy for him in the season he had, albeit the way that it all kind of fell apart at the end of the year. NFC South, I mean, look, I think all four of these teams, except for the Saints, I guess, so maybe three out of the four, have an interesting case. It's like, hey, we're going to be better next year. The two, I think Tampa Bay is going to be much more of the same. They have some aging players at some important positions. I love Baker, but I don't see Tampa Bay really being much better than they were this year, which is still, you know, 9-10 win team. And I think that's a good zone for them to live in. The question about the NFC South is, what does it look like with Michael Penix starting for a full season? We got a little tiny taste of what Michael Penix could be. I want to see more. And if he's as pro ready as we all kind of thought, could this be the year where Drake London and Bijan and Kyle Pitts all get in locked finally, right? Even though Drake London and Bijan are both putting up very good numbers. To me, the Falcons, it's on the defensive side of the ball and then the quarterback. Panthers, we love the story about Bryce Young. Is it real? Not just that he started playing better, but is it real to the extent that we can go, like, all right, year two with Dave Canales? They have free agent money. Maybe they can lure in a wide receiver. Maybe they can bring in some defensive players. Maybe they're a team that Myles Garrett gets traded to. Bring some fucking teeth to that defense. Very possible. But it all boils down to what was that run from Bryce Young at the end of the season? Was it real? Are they going to be a contender? Or is he just kind of going to be average? It's one of the more, like, no one's going to spend time talking about Bryce Young in the national landscape. I'm fascinated. I think it's one of the most just interesting stories to see. And then lastly, NFC West. This one's weird. This one's weird. Cardinals, I don't expect to be any different. Seahawks, as long as Geno's there, I don't expect to be any different, even though I think Mike McDonald is a very good coach. The Rams and the Niners. There's some Stafford trade reports out there, maybe to the Giants. I mean, they're the team that, you know, Slay himself said that was the team that had the best chance to beat us in the whole playoffs. And it's because Stafford, right? I mean, Jared Verse is a monster. There's some really good young players on that defense. Another year with, you know, McVay over there. I think the defense will be even better. But what happens with Stafford? They're already moving on from Cooper Kupp. That's been stated. What's going to happen? Who knows? It's going to be interesting to see. And the Niners, too. This kind of feels like, is this going to be the open or close part of the window? Purdy's going into the last year of his contract. Do they extend him? Excuse me. Do they extend Purdy? That's a big deal. And Debo's already requested his second trade of his career from San Francisco. Ayuk coming off the ACL. Kittle's another year older. The defense should be better with Greenlaw coming back healthy. Fred Warner, obviously, Nick Bosa. Like, the defense should be really good. But this is just giving more and more, as I've said in the past, just reminding me more and more of Andy when Andy was in Philly. And at some point, it's just going to be like, you know what? This isn't working. For Scotty's sake, I hope it does work out. Does McCaffrey come back healthy? If you have a fully healthy McCaffrey with Ayuk off the ACL and Kittle, and you lose Debo and you get some draft capital and Ricky Pearsall turns into something, all right. I'm back in. I think there's some real concerns about the offensive line in San Francisco. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting. All right. Ultimately, here as we wrap up this season, I kind of walk away going into next season before any of the offseason stuff has hit, feeling like, would it be that crazy if we ran this thing back next year? Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl again? No. But that's what the offseason's for. It's still fresh in our brains. And I'm going to savor every second of it. So, not sure if this will be the last pod or not. I'll try to get Scotty and Vito on for one last one, especially since you guys haven't heard from Scotty in a while. So just keep your eyes and ears out for that. If not, we'll probably take a break from the pod for a few weeks. We'll get back into the golf and the basketball and NHL. We even talked about the Luka trade, which is like one of the craziest things that's ever happened in sports. That's how locked in I was with the Super Bowl. But yeah, so you might hear from us next week. I'm moving. That's going to take up some of my time. But either way, you'll hear from us again as we approach 300 episodes here on the Read Option Pod. So for the boys, sincerely, thank you guys for being a part of this and listening and making us a part of your daily routine. We love you guys, sincerely. And go Birds, man. Go fucking Birds. Take it easy, everybody.